Good morning, and I hope you enjoyed the chance to get together with your friends as well as perhaps see some sources. I reintroduce you to the sample plants that we have here up front. We have wheat, rye, oats, and rice. So to return to our original question, which grains or which plants can actually generate chametz? If you had a chance to see the sheet, then you saw in source number one that the Mishnah in Pesachim says that there are five species of plants which can be used to make matzah, but which if they rise, create chametz. And the five are identified in the Mishnah as what? What are the Hebrew words that are used? Chita, Seora, don't say Geffen, what? Chita, Seora, Shifon, Kusmin, and Shibolet, Shu'al. But these are Hebrew words. The question is, what is the English translation for these five? And it's not at all simple, and it's not at all straightforward, because the Mishnah was concluded when? When was the Mishnah officially, formally written down, canonized, and sealed? The beginning of the 3rd century Common Era. That is a long time ago, right? About 1700 years ago. And it was on a different continent in Israel. And so the question is, which species did they mean? So the normal way that people translate them into English is what you see under number one, where it says wheat, barley, rye, spelt, and oats. Right? That's what we assume the five are. And in fact, that's what we've practiced for a very long time. However, I want to call your attention to a problem. Here is wheat. And barley looks fairly similar to wheat. I don't have barley here because the company from which I ordered these was out of barley. So, I do have rye. Do these look relatively similar?
No.
What's different? The color is a little different, right? The wheat has more hair. But the basic structure is what I want to call your attention to, this braiding at the top, which is actually where the kernels are. That's similar. Here, we have, what did we say these are? These are oats, not the rice. These are the oats. Do these look like the wheat and the barley?
No.
Or the rye, I should say. The answer is they don't really look like it. So that has led some to challenge whether oats in fact count. Are oats what are called shibolet shu'al? If you looked at the sources, if you saw source number two, Rashi said, shibolet shu'al gets its name because a shu'al is a
fox.
And he said that its stalk is like the tail of a fox. So we were kind enough to provide you with a picture of a fox's tail. Does this look like a fox's tail?
No.
No. What does Rashi have in mind when he says a fox's tail? Something more like this, right? Where it's braided at the top. That looks more like the fox's tail. This doesn't have it. This doesn't exactly like the fox's tail either. But it's a little closer. So that leads some to question whether oats are actually shibolet shu'al. Further, if you looked at number three, you saw the laws of kilayim. What do the laws of kilayim prohibit? What am I not allowed to do under the laws of Kilayim? Crossbreed plants, right? To plant plants of different species close together. And we're told in number three that barley and shibolet shu'al are considered to be very similar to each other. They're not considered different species. So again, we ask, does this look like barley? Do the oats look like barley? The answer is likely not. And if you took a look at source number four, you saw that shibolet shu'al is also called shura. What does the word shura mean in Hebrew?
Line.
Well, actually, that's what it means in English, but that counts. A shura is a line. This doesn't look like a line at all. These look like a line. And that has led some, led by a botanist by the name of Yehuda Felix, to actually challenge whether oats would count, so much so that there are some who insist that the bracha on oatmeal should be what? Sorry? Nope. Instead of mizonot, it should be adama, because they view it as not, they view oats as not a grape. Now, there are others who disagree, and they contend that the Mishnah was not simply in a vacuum 1,700 years ago in Israel. It's something that's been practiced ever since. And if we, for generations and centuries, have been considering oats as one of the grains, that came from knowledge. It came from the fact that we knew that Shibboleth Shu'al was oats, and all the sources you're going to bring to challenge its appearance can be explained in a variety of ways. There are different species and subspecies. The sources can be read differently. I'm not going to use the time right now to go into each specific argument and counter-argument, but the point is that there are those who believe that oats, in fact, do not qualify, and there are those who argue that, no, oats do qualify. It is a big debate, but what we should draw from this is that it's not simple to identify which species can actually become chametz, and you have that question for oats. Rice, on the other hand, looks entirely different, right? Rice doesn't look anything like what we saw for the wheat. I'm actually a juggler, but I'm not going to do that right now, because I'm the kind of juggler who drops the things that he's juggling. So these don't look the same at all, which is why rice is not a species of grain that can create chametz at all. Why don't Ashkenazim eat rice during Pesach? Sorry? Because it's not in the store. No, that's not the answer. Because of a custom/decree not to eat kidney oats, which came from various concerns. One concern being that even though they look very different, when you process rice and turn it into flour and use it to make products, you can get confused with the grains which you process and turn into flour and make products. There are other concerns as well, but it's beyond the scope of what we're going to do right at the moment. I'm making a mess up here as these fall apart. One last thing. Biochemistry, or botanical chemistry, as the case may be. Biochemistry, really. These are both dough. This was prepared by taking plain wheat that was ground up, mixing it with water to make dough, and then letting it sit. This, same thing, except yeast was involved, and therefore it rose. This actually rose more, but then I left it in my car overnight, and it sank. So initially, it rose more. This one rose slightly, but not all that much. We showed you on the sheet, if you took a look at source number, I think. Yes, if you took a look at source number 10. How many people there got number to number 10 and number 11? Okay, that's some. So we said that if you take flour and you expose it to water and you leave it for how long, it becomes chametz? 18. We said 18 minutes?
No.
No, said a meal. Thank you. The length of time it takes you to walk a meal is about a kilometer. There's some debate as to defining the time. We often use 18 minutes as the standard to say if you leave it for 18 minutes, even without yeast, nonetheless, some element of rising will happen. Now, I can't show this to each of you as I take it around. This is one that did not have yeast. I'm scattering chametz all over the school right before Pesach. This is a wonderful thing to do. Not nearly as wonderful as me making it yesterday at home. But this actually, the one that was just wheat and water, did develop cracks in it. It didn't rise in the sense of going up in the air and making a big puff like you'll see with some of the others on the table in a minute. However, it did start to crack a little bit. And cracking is actually considered the first sign of rising. Now, why these rise and why yeast does it is something that the later presentations will discuss. I'm not going to take more of their time. But I wanted to show you is, to a certain extent anyway, that when you take wheat flour and you mix it with water, there is enough airborne yeast. There's yeast in the air itself to create some level of fermentation, to create some level of rising, although it won't have the same impact as if you actually add yeast to it. I'm going to leave these up here, and afterwards people can come up and take a look, but I will now cede the floor to Rabbi Zirin.
We can follow this directly. Okay, good morning, everyone. So, my name is Jonathan Ziering. Some of you have my wife. Is it teacher? See, that doesn't have an Eruch Chaim quite as much. So I want to talk about two questions. So as Rabbi Tertina mentioned, this is the rice? Which one is the rice? This one? Who figured it out already? This is oats? Rice?
That's oats.
Oats. See how good I am at this. This is rice. So rice, we traditionally do not consider chametz if you're Ashkenazi and you don't eat kidney oats, so then you don't eat rice on Pesach. But we don't consider it chametz. But for those of you who got at least to source number 6, you discover that that wasn't always so obvious. And there in fact was a dispute in the Gemara as to whether this was the case. The Mishnah, which lists the 5 grains, as Rabbi Tertina already mentioned, list chitim, seorim, kuzmin, shifon, v'shibolet, shual. However, again, we translate that. But as the Gemara notes, the clear implications that those 5 grains, whatever those might be, but the Gemara starts, those, yes, honey, in, but orez, v'dochen, lo, but millet and rice are not chametz. But then the Gemara records that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri believed that rice was itself chametz. And then the Gemara describes why was it that the Chachamim disagreed with Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. And they said, despite the fact that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is correct, that rice can technically rise, it's still not chametz because it doesn't rise well. It doesn't completely rise. And therefore, it's somewhere in between. Now, you look at it, so you see that rice is somewhere in between, so maybe it's chametz, maybe it's not. But to try to figure out what that actually means and why one would actually dispute whether rice is chametz, you need to understand the scientific makeup of rice. So, coming back to the wheat, why does wheat rise? Assuming you put yeast in, why does it rise? So what does yeast do? What is yeast? It's a fungi, yeah, it's a microorganism. And what does it do? It digests the wheat and produces what? We're practicing here for chemistry, yeah? It produces what gas? Carbon dioxide. That creates the bubbles. Someone got it right. Okay, so that makes your bread rise. But once you bake bread, which if anyone's ever baked bread, so the yeast, once you put it inside, will die. The heat of the oven will kill the yeast. Yet, the bubbles stay, right? If anyone ever cuts challah, you look inside, it's not dense, right? It's airy. Now, why is it airy? What allows the bubbles to remain despite the fact that the yeast has died? Someone here must be allergic to what it is that makes it stay risen. Gluten. What is gluten? Gluten is a protein. It is a very, very strong protein that when the dough rises, so gluten creates a crystal structure, and that crystal is extremely strong. And when the dough rises, even though the yeast then dies, it captures the carbon dioxide. When it captures the carbon dioxide, it creates air bubbles. It makes your bread airy as opposed to thick and dense. And that's why your bread is fluffy. Okay? You with me so far? Okay? I don't know what exactly the exams are here in chemistry, but if that's a question, you'll understand the answer to that one. Okay, now rice. Does rice have gluten? No. So can it rise? Well, yes. It can, but the protein that rice has that's similar to gluten or accomplishes the same thing as gluten is much, much weaker. So, now if we go back to our science, if the protein is weaker and the crystal that it can create is weaker, so it will be able to rise, but what won't it be able to do? Stay risen. Exactly, it won't stay risen. So if you look over here, just as an experiment, I took plain rice flour and water. And as you can see, it rose. You can see this line over here. It used to be here, but now it's all the way up here. That was because I added like 3 tablespoons of yeast, which will make it rise. But as opposed to this over here, which is wheat, which you see is pretty strong, this, I put my finger in it, and what does it do? It collapses, right? Because Now we need a tissue. Right? Because as you can see, it's extremely weak. And while, if I put my finger here in the wheat, it will stay risen because it's strong. Because gluten is a particularly strong protein. If I so much as touch the rice, it automatically collapses. Therefore, if I was going to try to bake rice bread, what would happen? Once you put it in the oven, what would happen? It would collapse. And just as an experiment, I didn't have time to actually bake it, so I just introduced it to heat by a microwave for about a minute, and it turned into this. You can see how flat it is. There's nothing in it, no air bubbles, right? It's flat because it cannot maintain that status either under movement, either it's moved or under heat. So, now if we return to the Gemara, why would it be that there would be a dispute as to whether rice would be chametz or not? So it's very simple. Rice has one property which is similar to wheat, which is that it rises. But it lacks another quality, which is staying risen because it doesn't have gluten, which means that it's in between. Now, whenever you have something in between, so if you try to figure out, is it more similar to wheat or more similar to, let's say, corn, so then you're going to dispute because it's sort of like wheat and sort of like non-wheat. Hence, you have a dispute, and that was what you saw here. And for those of you who saw the very difficult source in number 8, right, you can figure this out without having a PhD in chemistry. Or if you go online, this was a baking blog. Right? If you look at a baking blog, anyone who bakes or tries to bake gluten-free knows this. So number 8, all I did was a summary of what I just said from, I believe this was a baking blog in New Zealand, only because that was the first thing that came up on a Google search. But all you really need to do sometimes to figure these things out is look at the very, very highly scientific world of baking blogs. So that is the issue of rice. I have pictures here of when I tried it at a different time, but even from there you could see what it is that rice does. Now that brings me to the second point. That brings me back to chametz. Rice is not chametz, at least the way we paskin, but chametz, right, something which rises from wheat, as that one is now overflowed onto the table, is in fact chametz. But now I want to try to figure something out with you. Chametz. What does the word mean? It means leaven, something that rose. Now, the shoresh, chet mem tzadi, what does it mean in Hebrew? In English. What does it mean in English? What is chametz? What is chamutz in Hebrew? Sour. Is chametz sour? No. What is sour?
Sour bread.
Sour bread, right? Sourdough bread, right? Now, what is the Hebrew for sourdough? In biblical Hebrew, seor. And the Torah describes two things which are forbidden on Pesach. One is chametz and the other is seor. And for those of you who got to 9, the Gemara describes what exactly is seor. This is actually the OU's daily email today, if you got the OU's kashrus email. So it was a perfect day. Seor is sourdough. And the Gemara in 9 cites a dispute between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel says that both seor and chametz are also on Pesach, but they have the same degree of prohibition. Both of them are only usher if you have a kezias, the size of an olive. Beis Shammai says that's not the case. Seor is usher, is forbidden when you have a kezias, and regular chametz is only bikuseves. Bikikuseves. And the Gemara says why? So the Gemara describes that seor, sourdough, is chimutzo kashe. It makes other things leaven, but it is inedible. So let me ask you, how do you make sourdough? Anyone ever make sourdough from scratch? It takes a very... Aurea is smiling because this takes a very long time. It took me 2.5 weeks. It takes a very long time. Yeah, how do you make sourdough? So you can go onto the very scientific website of WikiHow, and they will tell you how you make it. So what you do, you can go on. I know you all have phones, which is, we're hooked up to the internet here. So if you make sourdough, so why is sourdough sour? So the way it works is you, instead of using yeast that comes in the jar, the microorganism, so if you don't have the yeast, which you have already processed, where do you get yeast from? The air. The air, right? Georgina said this a little bit, but how do you catch it? How do you catch yeast in the air and put it in your bread? Any guesses? Or anyone open WikiHow? So, you take flour and water, warm water, and you mix it up, and then you leave it for 24 hours. The next day, you add more flour and more water. Day 3, you do it again. And day 4, you do it again. And you keep doing this. And every few days, you do what's called feeding it. You take out half of it, you throw it out, and you put in new flour and water. And as the process goes on, I have pictures here I'll pass around, and then I'll show you the actual stuff over there. So what will happen is, by the time you get to day 4, people sitting in the front, day 4, what do you see happening on top? This is the flour and water. What's floating on top? You'll see a clear liquid on top. Right? See about an inch of clear, a centimeter of clear liquid right over here. Right? About 4 days in, it will create a clear liquid on top, which, surprisingly, smells like sourdough. It's sour. Now, sour, right? It is sour. So, in the olden days, before you could, in a lab, create yeast, you could isolate yeast and put it in a jar. If you wanted yeast, you had to catch it from the air. When you did, when you made sourdough, you had to collect it this way, from the air. That's se'or, and it looks and smells like vinegar. Hence, the reason chametz is because naturally caught yeast, which comes from se'or, looks and smells like vinegar. And then, even if you don't take yeast, you then mix that, what's called starter, in with other flour. You let it rise for a longer period of time. In this case, I let it rise for 24 hours. And I don't know if you can see, but people in the front can see, right? What's distinctive about it, like any other bread? Holes, air bubbles, it rose. And if you smell it, anyone ever have sourdough? Anyone know what sourdough smells like? You'll note there's a slight... Anyone want to smell it? It's just bread. But there's a slight sour taste. You can pass it around. There's a slight sour taste. Right? Because it's sourdough. So if we come back, and it tastes fine. You can, if you want afterwards, you can cut a piece and you can wash after everyone has passed it around. And there's many other things growing on that than were before. The sourdough starter, you can also notice, this is just flour and water that's been sitting with no yeast added. What's inside? What can you see that's noticeable about it? Bubbles. Bubbles, because it's fermenting inside. The yeast has been growing inside. And this, at some point, was extremely thick dough. And you can see, by this point, it's a liquid because the yeast has been eating the dough. And as it eats, it becomes thinner and thinner. What? I'm not going to. This is about as chametz as it could possibly be. Right? This is se'or. Right? And this, now, this is only about a week old, this starter. Does anyone know how long bakeries leave their yeast in order to make, and leave their sourdough starter in order to make sourdough bread? Take a guess. Decades. Because as you go along, it gets stronger and stronger. So when the Gemara says that se'or is inedible, but chimutzo kasheh, but it's been rising forever, they're not kidding. Right? It can rise for 30, 40, 50 years. People inherit it from their grandparents. And it gets stronger as you go along. So, I see that people think this is disgusting, but sourdough bread is fine. That's what it is over there. So if we come back now to the issue of se'or and chametz, when we want to figure out what did the psukim mean when it said se'or, the answer is it's sourdough starter. It's that naturally collected yeast, which unlike our yeast, which is not chametz because it has no flour in it, that has flour and water that's been rising and rising for days, weeks, years, or decades. Hence, it is very, very, very chametz, even if it's inedible. And when we ask the question, why is chametz called chametz? Why is it sour? It's because naturally produced yeast has inherently a sour taste, like sourdough bread, as people are passing it around. So, asking what is Sa'ar and what is Chametz comes down to understanding how they used to make, how they used to collect yeast and produce sourdough. There's a little bit more sourdough here if people want. Somewhere it's around. You can eat it if you really want after that. But that is just the basics of Chametz and Sa'ar. And I turn it over to Ray Grunland.
Okay, so I'm going to be talking more about these guys, oats. Particularly oat flour. Now, we said when it comes to making dough rise, when it comes to making bread rise, so we have the yeast which causes bubbles, and what solidifies those bubbles so it stays?
Gluten.
So, do oats have gluten? Does anyone know? No? Maybe?
No.
Yes?
No.
We've got no. Is that
maybe?
No, wait.
Okay, so the answer is sort of. Okay? Sort of. Because oats inherently do not actually have gluten. They have another protein that acts similar to gluten called avenin. It does similar kind of things, but it's not as strong as gluten is, which is why oats by themselves barely rise, and if you add yeast to them, they rise a little bit, but also can sustain it. Eventually they'll puff up, and then they'll depress. They'll puff down, I suppose. So what I have here is I have different examples of oat flour mixed with water, just with water. This is technically gluten. Now, sometimes you'll see oats marked with gluten in it, or that you have to be careful for gluten, because those oats are processed in a plant where there are other grains like wheat and rye and barley that may have gluten in them. And so then there's cross-contamination, and it actually has gluten in it. And so this is just regular oats, oat flour, that had some gluten. Here's a line. You can see, this will be over there, and we'll pass it around later if you want. It rose slightly above the line. This is gluten oats. So here, if you want to look at the gluten oats, how it rose just slightly. Now, I have also gluten-free oats here. And so this was a specially marked package. This didn't move at all. It is incredibly dense, it is incredibly dry, and it doesn't rise on any level. It just stops. Once you make the flour and it's flour, pat it down, it's not going to move at all. This is a gluten-free oat flour. I wouldn't recommend eating it, though, because, you know, for example, display only. So here you go, you can pass that around as well. And then finally, I did one which is also with a little bit of yeast. And as I said, because there's not gluten, there's avenin, which is a weaker form of gluten, but also the oats can't sustain the growth, you'll see that it did rise a little bit, especially in the middle, it came up more, but it's not so much. And that's really the idea that oats, when we look at them and we say, are they chametz, are they not chametz? Well, there are certain aspects of them which do react in a way like wheat, but really, on a fundamental level, it's much weaker. So we can understand why we might think, because there is a rise to it, so we can understand why we might think that it's chametz. At the same time, we can see that it functions also quite differently, or not to the same level, more similar to rice. I'm going to stop there and hand it off to Rabbi Rosenzweig, and he'll explain more about just wheat.
We've already discussed but it's also been way over 18 minutes. But even if it had not been over 18 minutes, I kind of cheated. A little confession. When you make real matzah, you don't use hot water. And obviously, you don't use yeast either. It's just wheat flour and water, and it's very dry, and it's just room temperature. I used hot water, so that helped a lot. I also used an enormous amount of yeast. That helped a lot. And that's where we end up with this mess. It's also been, over half an hour. So it had plenty of time to rise. And just to demonstrate very quickly, we've been talking about gluten over and over. And you can see these kind of strands. And just what Rabbi Ziering was saying, when you pull it, the fact that it can do that is because of gluten. This is nothing unusual. You've seen this if you've made challah before. If you've made any sort of bread, that's bread, quite simply. Okay. So just to summarize very, very quickly what we did this morning, at least until the bell rings, we had the different plants, and we showed that chametz is what we call it when yeast that is airborne or that is introduced takes the grain, digests the grain, creates carbon dioxide, which forms bubbles, causing your bread to rise. Wheat does that, barley does that, rye does that, oats do it, but without gluten. And what we saw, as well as spelt potentially, but what we saw is that the gluten is what allows the air bubbles to stay so that you have this rising bread that will actually stay. And that's because of the gluten. If something lacks gluten, as in the case of the rice that Rabbi Ziering demonstrated, then the bubbles will collapse, and that's not a true rising, and that's what causes us not to view rice as something that can create chametz. We also saw the sourdough, in which the yeast is allowed to run rampant for a very long time, and it just over-digests the grain, and that's what creates the sourdough. And I think that basically sums up what we said this morning. So stay away from chametz. That's the moral of the story. Now you know it because you've seen it. If you want to come up now and see the different sample plants, to see the doughs that rose, didn't rise, rose partially and then collapsed, and so on, you are free to do so. Thank you very much. Chag Kasher v'Sameach.